Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with 2 minutes of your time. Just give us your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay. And whether you call or decide to pledge online, we always keep your personal information safe. We don't share it with any other organizations.
And your gift will turn into the stories and programs that keep you connected to the world. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm Veronica Rickert with Rob Ferret, and we're here asking for your support of the WPR programs that you count on. And thank you in advance for your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You are a part of Wisconsin Public Radio's community of listeners. Maybe you have been for a long time. Now you can become part of our community of members, people who loyally support the programs they value.
Your contribution of any amount makes you a member. And remember, it's not about how much you can do alone. It's about how much we can do together. Make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, you can get headlines and sound bites in other places, but where do you go for in-depth discussion?
Well, the Ideas Network, of course. And here you don't just get a 20-second clip of a few minutes of back and forth. You get plenty of time to develop ideas and to ask questions. WPR is a great source of in-depth information. Your support right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes it possible.
And you can receive Boomerang by Michael Lewis as a thank you gift with your pledge of $150 or more. Your pledge will help support the programs and you'll enjoy this great thank you gift. That's Boomerang for your pledge of $150. Your pledge of any amount supports WPR programs at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Many of us are committed to making our community a better place. We volunteer our time, we recycle, and we help those who need it. Well, making a financial contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio makes our community a better place, too.
Your investment, put together with donations from others, makes the music, the news, and talk on WPR available to everyone. We're proud to be an important part of this community. Help us stay strong with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we are looking for, looks like, we haven't got a refresh on the computer screen yet, but 80 pledges in by 11 o'clock. So we've got about 50 minutes left to go. Get your pledge in now, and then you can really doubly enjoy that conversation with Michael Lewis coming up. He's only doing a week of interviews. That includes the whole nation, you know, not WPR alone. So we're privileged to have him on. We're excited to hear that conversation, and you'll feel so much the better if you've made your pledge as you're listening. Well, thank you if you've already given, and if not, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR is your radio station. We create and produce programs with your interests in mind. We aim to serve you and even exceed your expectations sometimes, I hope.
It's not an exaggeration to say that listeners are always in our thoughts during our daily work. And WPR is your station because you help fund it. Help us fund it right now by donating at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And maybe giving a dollar a day is the right amount for your Wisconsin Public Radio listening. When you think about it, a dollar a day is a great value. It comes out to about $365, about $30 a month. You can set that up as monthly transfers from your bank account or credit card installments. Any way you do it, we'll make it convenient for you. Make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, you're not alone. I'm sure you might be alone in your car or your home or your office, but in truth, you're sharing that experience with us and with other listeners.
We have a lot in common. We share values that bind us together. Your support is a big part of what makes this program possible for you and for the community you share it with. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You decide the amount of your pledge. Every pledge is appreciated, and every pledge helps pay for the programs that you love on Wisconsin Public Radio. Now consider asking for the book Boomerang as your thank you gift when you give $150 or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hey, look at that. All right, here we go. We've got 7 pledges already this hour. Thank you to those who have already pledged. How about you? Make that pledge now. Help us make our goal this hour. Hey, consider making your pledge in the form of an ongoing monthly gift. You can set that up on a credit card or right from your bank account. When you make an ongoing gift, You don't have to remember to renew your support each and every year.
You'll be a sustaining member, and your support will be as consistent as your WPR listening, month after month, year after year. Become a sustainer now by making an ongoing gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your gift to WPR is a gift through WPR to the community. You enjoy this radio station, and so do many others who can't afford to support it. Make your pledge right now. For yourself, for the community, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we are looking for 71 more pledges by 11 o'clock this hour. We can get there with your help. Help out now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have a special thank you gift. If you pledge $150 or more, you can get a copy of our guest's book, Michael Lewis's Boomerang, Travels in the New Third World. How do you get it? You make a pledge of $150 or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And remember, you can pledge any amount, whatever's right for you. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This is your chance to make a difference in your community, in your own listening, and, of course, for us here at Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not always so easy to make a difference, and you can do it today with just 2 minutes of your time and your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's our half the time pledge drive. Usually we go 12 days on this big, massive fall pledge drive, a huge, major part of Wisconsin Public Radio's budget. We're doing it in just 6 days this time. Will it work? Hey, that's up to you. With your pledge, we can make it work at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552, and thank you.
Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Michael Lewis is our guest now. Michael Lewis is all over the place. He has a new book, Boomerang, Travels in the Third World, and you will learn so much when you read this book like this. In Iceland, people own $35,000 Range Rovers with $100,000 loans against them, so the air shakes with explosions as the owners blow them up for the insurance. Michael knows that because he was in Iceland. Oh, does he write about Iceland. And he writes about other countries, too. He went on what's called a financial disaster tour, surveying some of the most financially challenged countries in the world, from Iceland and Ireland to Greece and the United States. Michael was with us last year as a result of his writing The Big Short. He's also the best-selling author of Liar's Poker, Moneyball, and we will have to talk a little bit of baseball with him because of what's going on in Wisconsin, and The Blind Side. And the book has been described by at least one reviewer as a desperately funny book. There is a funniness born of desperation. For 20 years now, Michael has been chronicling financial extremes, and some of the people he meets and talks about in this book are characters. And you can't believe they're doing what they're doing. You just can't believe it. And the impact they're having on the whole world's financial system. So Michael is with us now, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for him. I know we'll have tons of phone calls. Here is the number. Get your place in line, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you want to send an email, can we do that? Yeah, we could do that. talk@WPR.org. Hello, Michael.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Can I make a pledge?
Oh, Michael, seriously? Would you?
There's a string attached. I'll pledge $250, but don't send me that book.
Well, you could autograph it.
I'll send you a book. But I'd love to make a pledge.
Mike, thank you, Michael. That was darn nice of you. I didn't expect that to happen.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, public radio, so it's so important.
You're right.
And it's a source for me. It's with children now. It's become the major source of news. So it troubles me that we're living through times where you have to spend so much time raising money.
Right.
Let's raise some money.
Thank you, Michael. I'm going to ask, though, are you going to send it in nickels?
Can I explain that to your audience?
Please, it's a great story.
Okay. I was working on The Big Short about the U.S. financial debacle, and I was essentially touring the country finding money managers who had seen it coming and made a bunch of money betting on the collapse of the subprime mortgage bond market. One such character was a hedge fund manager in Dallas named Kyle Bass. And when I got to him, he put me onto Boomerang. He put me onto this book because he said, what just happened here is just act one. Because you can see what's happening is all these bad debts are accumulated in the banking system, and now the countries have come in to essentially guarantee the banks. And in some cases, they can't afford to guarantee their banks. So the next thing that's going to happen is sovereign states are going to start going bust. And I thought he was nuts. And I said to him, well, what do you do in this situation? Where do you put your money? And the first thing he says is guns and gold. And then I was sure he was nuts. But then he says, and I bought some nickels. And I said, what do you mean nickels? He says, well, the metal content of the U.S. nickel is worth 6.8 cents. So if you buy it for a nickel, you're locking in an arbitrage profit. And I said, well, what do you do with this information? I said, he says, I just bought 20 million nickels. And he had a picture of his nickels stored in a Brinks vault. And I thought how I kind of asked, I said, how do you buy 20 million nickels? He said, you got to call your bank, and it ends up in a conversation with the U.S. Federal Reserve. And the Fed wanted to know why this guy wanted to buy 20 million nickels. So the bank asked him, why you want to buy 20 million nickels? And he said, I just like nickels.
I will never look at a nickel the same way after reading that.
You'll give them dimes instead of nickels.
I know. You're going to do something to nickels in this country. They're going to become scarce, don't you think?
I don't know how many people have the energy to make money a penny and 1.8 cents at a time, so maybe not. But the sort of person who sees the sovereign debt crisis coming is also the sort of person who sees the metal content of the nickel.
Yeah. You know, isn't it weird that a guy like Kyle Bass sees the sovereign debt crisis coming and it wants to make some money on this? It all boils down to human beings and sort of this desire to make a lot of dough, doesn't it?
Well, he was very, very odd in seeing, in having the views he had. And what his principal interest, it was more not losing money rather than making money was his first, because he was saying to himself, I'm a professional investor, where do I put my clients' assets if I think this is true? And because if you think that first Greece goes bankrupt and then there's going to be a wave of defaults or restructurings of debt in Italy and Spain and maybe even France and Japan, where do you go? And so it was more a sense of self-preservation, I think, that drove the analysis in the first place. But then once you're there in your head, they're now the financial markets offer you a mechanism to bet on the collapse of these countries. You buy just as it gave you a mechanism to bet on the collapse of the U.S. financial system. The credit default swap on a bond. So you bet that Greece is going to default. And one of the problems in the system right now, it's not a huge one, but it is a problem, is that a lot of banks, it's essentially an insurance policy. You get to buy insurance on Greek government bonds. A lot of big banks have sold this insurance, and nobody knows quite how much they've sold. And so if Greece indeed does default, as it's certain to do, the banks are going to have losses. And we're back to where we were in 2008, where nobody knows how many losses the banks have and nobody wants to put their money with the banks.
Yeah. Let's go to Iceland, which has to be one of the wackiest places on earth right now. And you write this really fascinating chapter about people knocking India on the streets and hitting you with luggage on the airplane and hotels being half empty. There are so many fascinating stories of this. How did fishermen turn out to be a lot like American investors?
Well, so this is a breathtakingly bizarre story.
Mm-hmm.
You have this island of 300,000 people that most people assume are just kind of sweet Scandinavian types. And this is a country that has the population of Peoria, Illinois, and they have three banks. In 2001, they have three banks, and the three banks are of modest size. You add up all the assets in the banks, and you get to a couple of billion dollars. It is a prosperous society. They've very intelligently managed their fishing policy, and they've in the 20 years prior to this, they have generated quite a lot of wealth from the fish. And they've used their wealth very intelligently. They've invested in education. They invest in self-improvement. So it's a highly educated population that basically fishes for a living, which is probably an unstable situation right there. And then all of a sudden, the financial markets, the global banks, are offering people, all sorts of people, loans that, on all sorts of great terms that they hadn't done before, and basically unlimited amounts. So think of what happened with a U.S. subprime mortgage borrower, and multiply it by billions, and you got Iceland. Because the Icelandic banks decided they were going to be world beaters. And just a few years later, they controlled $140 billion in assets. They owned everything from Indian power plants to Danish newspapers to British soccer teams.
Goodness.
Essentially, a fisherman turned themselves into bankers and started to take over the world. And literally, people were walking off fishing trawlers and taking risk for banks within days. I interviewed a fellow who was very charming, attractive fellow, very smart. He had, since the age of 16, had been training to be a fishing captain and was regarded as a really gifted fisherman. And he was now in his early 30s, and fishing was very, very hard. Someone came to him one day and said, you know, you can make a lot more money, and it's not as hard if you're just an investment banker. And he walked off his trawler into one of the banks, and three days later, he's a foreign currency trader, and he's taking risk for the bank. And you ask him, Stefan Olfsen was his name. I said, Stefan, you know, it took you 7 years before you were a master of the seas, before you were qualified to be the captain of a fishing trawler. Why did you think it would take only 3 days to be, you know, a trader in an investment bank? And he starts laughing. He said, I never really thought of it that way because I just always thought this was so easy. It seemed like easy work. And I think if you ask where this came from, this sense that, oh, anybody can do it, and the way you're supposed to make money is from money, and investment banking is the be-all and end-all. It came from us. These Icelanders went off to Wharton and Harvard and MIT and got graduate degrees, and they saw us doing this with our financial system, and they thought we could do it too.
Another fascinating part of this, and everything about this Iceland story and all the others are absolutely compelling, but the problem was that people in Iceland simply didn't listen to women. Don't you think?
Well, so there are layers. Just to back away for one sec, the thing that interested me was, including in the United States, what happened was essentially a big pile of money was put in a dark room, and the population was allowed to do whatever they wanted with it. It was a story of temptation. And it was also a story that it's sort of like the societies were allowed to exaggerate aspects of themselves. And in Iceland, the fishermen are men. It's man's work, basically. So the fishermen and the political party that was in power when the banks were deregulated and allowed to do whatever they wanted to do was the fisherman's party. There was another party that was more female-based party, but the men were in power and the men were in the banks. And you could see what happened. I mean, this is a country where basically everybody knows everybody else and is probably related to them. The men basically were behind the steering wheel, telling their wives they knew exactly where they were going, knew exactly what they were doing, and no, we're not going to stop and look at a map or ask directions at the gas station. And the women had watched their men successfully fish for a long time, and just assumed these guys knew what they were talking about when they were talking about money. And then the system crashes. All of a sudden, the world wakes up and says, oh, my God, there might be some risk in turning Iceland into a global financial capital. And nobody wants to lend the Icelanders money, and the banks have $100 billion in losses. They have $400,000 in losses for every man, woman, and child in Iceland. And the women wake up, and they say, you stop, pull over. We're going to ask directions, and I'm going to drive. And what's happened since is that women have moved into senior roles in the banks, and the political party that was in power was thrown out, and Iceland has its first lesbian head of state.
Incredible!
There was a gender divide that was exaggerated by the money, and there's now a reckoning between husbands and wives.
We are going to take phone calls for Michael Lewis. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. And because he was so generous to give us $250 for our pledge drive, I just want to tell you very quickly, we are in a pledge drive. And for $150, you will forever remember this interview. And let me tell you, this is just one of the stories. The book is filled with absolutely, you can't believe that they're true. You read them and you say, I can't believe this is true. So if you want to pledge, that would be very nice. $150 pledge, and you can take home a copy of his wonderful new book, Boomerang, Travels in the New Third World. And the pledge number is 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552. As he talked about what happened with Iceland being left alone in a dark room with a pile of money, he also looks at what would Greece do, what would the Irish do, and what about California, where he's from. Let's go to one of your phone calls. Mike in South Milwaukee is our first caller. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I've read a couple of his books, and I also have read the articles in Vanity Fair. I'd like to hear your comments about Greece, and it's my take that this Greece default is basically about the solvency of the banks of Germany and France, and ultimately Greece is going to collapse because there's no way they can pay back what they owe. So when is the collapse of the euro coming? That's my question.
So this is a very good question, and this is someone who's obviously kept very closely in touch with the news. The Greeks, when they were left alone in a dark room with a pile of money, wanted to do almost the opposite of what the Icelanders did. They did not actually behave financially irresponsibly in their banks. Their banks remained sleepy old places that were stably run. The only mistake their banks made was to invest in Greek government bonds. And the Greek government bloated itself, and it did. It was an exaggeration of a problem that existed before this whole money event hit it. But the problem was the relationship between the people and their government, and they used their government as a kind of pinata. They stuff it full of goodies and whack it, and take as much as they could for themselves. So there are lots of jobs in Greece that are government jobs and aren't real jobs, and people have a corrupt relationship with the state, and the Greeks don't have a culture of paying taxes. So it's just the done thing not to pay your taxes. So they're running big deficits, and they have a total lack of faith in their government, not surprisingly, and a mistrust of each other as well. Nothing I could say about the Greeks would be harsher than what the Greeks say about each other individually. So you've got this problem. They borrowed all this money. The government has borrowed all this money. They don't have an efficient or competitive private sector that can generate the wealth to repay it. They are going to default, and he's right. The problem where it gets complicated is when they default, who gets stiffed? And right now, it's mainly European banks, Greek banks, but also French and German banks. And why the French and the Germans are gnashing their teeth right now trying to save Greece, or one reason, is they're afraid of what happens to their banks when their banks don't get paid back. And so giving money to Greece is, in a way, giving money to German and French banks. It just gets bounced right back to the German and French banks. When Greece defaults, as it will, it's just a question of what the default is. Are they going to pay back 50 cents on the dollar or 20 cents on the dollar or not nothing at all? The question is, does that trigger an unraveling of the euro? And the answer is not necessarily. It's possible to default within the euro. But the problem is, the euro is at the bottom of the cause of the problem. That Greece can't get itself back into a competitive position unless it can devalue its currency. It means that it can lower its prices, basically. And as long as they've got the same currency as the Germans, they can't devalue. So Greece needs to be out of it. Greece needs to have its own currency that can have a lower value that enables Greek goods to be competitive on the world markets. And so there are these pressures to get out of it. And the German people don't want to be in the same currency with the Greeks. So there are these, but the pressures are coming oddly, I mean maybe not so oddly, from the man on the street. I mean the populations don't want to be yoked together by this currency, but the politicians still want them yoked together. Mm. And it's just a question of when the political forces exert themselves.
Was this said just in jest, Michael, or was there any kind of serious thought about selling any of the gorgeous islands to Germany?
Well, there are German politicians who said, seriously, Greece needs to sell its islands to pay us back. And it's not a joke. And in fact, there's a kind of fire sale that's supposed to be going on of all kinds of Greek assets. The Greek state has, nobody knows quite the value of what the Greek government owns, and it's probably a shifting number anyway, but they own all kinds of lands, weird properties, and they have, the real estate's all in this, it's in this one ministry in the government, and they've now started to auction it. And they have targets. They're supposed to make, I can't remember what the number is, but they're supposed to say generate 3 or 4 billion euro of sales by the end of the year. And there have been little stories in the news about how it's not happening, how it isn't moving quite as fast as everyone hoped. And this is just generally true of all the Greek reforms, that that people come and say now the Greeks are going to have to start paying their taxes, and the Greeks politicians kind of nod their heads, but then the Greeks don't pay their taxes. And this whole story, this whole global financial mess we're in, is at bottom a cultural story. And you're asking the Greek culture to change basically overnight, and I don't think that's how cultures change.
Mm. So let's go to Ireland. I thought I was going to die about 4 years ago, and I didn't. I'm still living. So I decided, well, I'll take my family to the homeland. So we go to Ireland. And holy cow, Ireland is just booming. You go into these little tiny towns, and there are gorgeous new homes and apartment buildings. And where are the little Irish places that I used to see when I'd been there before, and they weren't there? And I'm thinking, what the heck happened in this country? And if the Irish have all this money in the dark room, they're going to buy Ireland.
That's exactly right. They rhyme with Iceland, but they aren't the same thing. They borrowed lots of money from foreigners, and they bloated up, made their banks really, really big. But what people wanted to do with that money was not go conquer the world. They wanted to conquer Ireland.
Mm.
And it's what you saw, if you went back now, is in its way even more interesting. You drive the country, and there are hundreds of these, they call them ghost estates. What they are is ghost towns.
Goodness.
And you think of a ghost town and you think of dilapidated buildings in the middle of nowhere where they've been abandoned. These are new houses that have never been occupied. So they're brand new ghost towns. And you, in downtown Dublin, there are these beautiful skyscrapers and also holes in the ground that were meant to contain skyscrapers. The skyscrapers that have never been occupied, and where, you know, it's this building that's completely kitted out, and the ground floor is a lobby with marble that's got water pooling in it because it's just left to the elements. And what they did was they created this land bubble that makes what happened in California or Arizona or Nevada look tame. And one of the things that's wonderful in a funny way about these stories is how when these crazy things happen, the populations that are engaged in the craziness develop a story to justify it. It's why it all makes sense kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the Irish told themselves a story. And the story was basically that, you know, we lived in poverty for 1,000 years. And in the early 80s, this miracle happened called Irish growth. And they genuinely did have an economic miracle, an event that basically it's been very hard for economists to explain. The most interesting explanation I've read is by sociologists that the Catholic Church lost its grip on the Irish mind, and people and women started using contraception, and the birth rate collapsed. And as a result, you had a weirdly disproportionate number of working-age people because they weren't having all these children. And but anyway, for whatever reason, Ireland actually became a successful, very successful, prosperous economy, but with no good explanation for why. And so it seemed kind of magical. And once you untether people's economic lives from an explanation, there's no end to it. The Irish basically said, well, it's a magical event. Let's see how much more magical it can get. And they, when they bid up these land prices, and let me tell you, the numbers are amazing. In downtown Dublin, or in one of the the neighborhoods of Dublin, there's a row of houses that are very nice houses. They might be the nicest houses in Dublin. But they look like, not quite mansions. They're like very, very nice upper middle class houses. And at the peak, one of these changed hands for $80 million.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, so think about that. I mean, that just puts it, kind of gives you a sense of how unreal it became. And what that implied was they thought that not only are the Irish going to stop leaving Ireland, but the world is basically going to move into this place. That how on earth would Irish real estate become so valuable unless Ireland became this thriving sort of place where everybody wanted to come live? But no one's ever wanted to go live in Ireland. People have wanted to leave Ireland. So when it all comes crashing down, it's a matter of it's not just a financial matter. It's a matter of Irish identity.
Mm-hmm. And now the cranes are just sitting there, Michael?
Well, I was there. The last time I was there was last November. And there were cranes all over the sky that were just idle. There was all kinds of signs of construction that was just, it was like you turn off the garden hose and there's still water left in the hose. You could see what was happening when the financial markets crashed. And so in the skyscraper region of where the skyscrapers were thrown out in downtown Dublin, there was a Starbucks. And the Starbucks clearly just closed one day, and the pitcher of milk was still out. It was like Pompeii. You know, it was just frozen. It's frozen in time, and the time that it was frozen was when Lehman Brothers crashed. Basically, right then, all this activity just stopped because the banks collapsed and they wouldn't lend anymore.
Mm. Michael Lewis is our guest, and his latest book is Boomerang: Travels in the New Third World. Our phone number for you to talk to Michael is 800-486-8655. And I must tell you that we are also in a very important fall pledge drive for $150 contribution to our survival. We will be happy to send you Michael's latest book. So that pledge number for you to call is 888-202-2552. Linda in Monroe, our next caller. Michael, hi, Linda.
Good morning, Kathleen. It's an honor to talk to you, Michael.
Oh, well, thank you.
I read your book, The Big Short. Now, I heard on the web from Truthout that the five biggest U.S. banks control 95% of the toxic derivative market. Now, I don't think we're ever going to get anything done controlling our growing deficit or debt until we regulate our toxic derivative market. And what would you agree?
Yes. You don't even have to call it a toxic derivative market to get to persuade me. This is the problem that, from my point of view, and this is the problem that's sort of elucidated in The Big Short, is that if the derivative market, one way of thinking about it, it's not just this, but one of the things that happens in it is that banks are able to make giant bets with other banks that are essentially invisible to both their shareholders, even to a lot of their employees, to the world. And so you don't know what risks they've taken on. All you know is that you don't know. And so the minute one of them gets into trouble, they're all in trouble because you don't know who's exposed to the one that's in trouble, who has bets on with the one that's in trouble. So it's absolutely critical that I think two things. One, some of the derivatives markets get shut down. There's really no good reason for credit default swaps to exist. No good reason. And I would love to stand up and have a public debate with the head of Goldman Sachs about this, but no one wants to talk about it openly because it's such a source of profits. But instruments that were created, the derivative instruments, are just not of value to society. But two, the ones that are, they need to be traded on through clearinghouses so that there's a centralized understanding of who has what risk.
And thanks, Linda, very much for your call. Teresa in Viroqua. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So a friend of mine posted something on Facebook recently about the situation in Iceland and protests that were going on. And it was the most fascinating thing. And I was curious if you knew the story behind it. But the people were protesting. It was the beginning of the parliament session, and apparently they have some ritual where they go from the church to the parliament. And the all the powers that be were marching along, and the people were throwing eggs and all sorts of things in the protest. But then the First Lady of Iceland got out of the line with the parliament and went over to greet the protesters, and then climbed over the fence and was in with the protesters, just really embracing them, hugging them, crying with them. I mean, it was like, wow, is this... Can you imagine Michelle Obama doing something like that? I can't, but...
There are a couple of interesting things about this. One is the First Lady is married to a woman. So the head of state.
Very
of Iceland,
unusual.
That's interesting. But two, the woman she's married to got elected after all the mess happened. So she's brought in to fix things. Nobody blames her for what's happened. But the third thing is, when Icelanders protest, it's really a different sort of event than when, say, we protest, because it is a nation of 300,000 people. They all know each other, and so the people. And they were all culpable. They were all one way or another had their fingerprints on this financial debacle. So that they can be angry, but there's a kind of sense that what they're really angry at is themselves. And the us versus them thing doesn't go very far there, because they're all intertwined.
We need to get in the time. I want to have a second on baseball at the end, but we need to go to California, too. And I remember doing a show in Vallejo not that long ago. What is the story in California? Are we going to see a lot of communities just simply go bankrupt, Michael? And if so, why?
I chose California because I think California is America in this aspect. What I think is going to happen is that essentially, the federal government is going to continue to be able to finance itself and borrow money no matter how badly it behaves for some time. The problems are going to be pushed down to the states, and the states are going to push the problems down to communities. So California government state bonds are not going to go bad. The state's going to handle its obligations, but what it's going to do is stiff the cities. And if you go right now, that's what's happening. There's not a city in California that doesn't have a fiscal crisis, not a big city. And the question is, then, what do they do with that? Well, they all borrow money in the municipal bond market. One thing you do have to ask is, how good are those municipal bonds if the underlying city is basically without money? The bondholders tend to have a lot of protection, and they tend to get paid first. So what then happens is the city just cuts and cuts and cuts services. And that's what we're seeing. Vallejo is an example of that, but so is San Jose, and so is Oakland. You cut the police force and the fire department by half, and all of a sudden your house is more likely to be burned down, or you're more likely to get hit on the head and nobody cares. And the fraying of the community, which grows out of, it isn't a lack of resources exactly, because we're living in the most affluent society in the history of the planet. It's a sort of willingness to commit the resources. The Californians, like Americans, want public services, but they don't want to pay for them. And the question is, when, at what level of sort of disarray of public life do people wake up and say, this isn't how we want to live? But we haven't got there yet. And in Vallejo is a particularly poignant case study, because Vallejo actually did declare bankruptcy. It got there for the same reasons that other cities might in California. Collapsing real estate market, collapsing revenues associated with real estate. One thing leads to big contracts with their public safety workers they can't afford. And then all of a sudden you've got Armageddon. And what was hopeful, it's a weirdly hopeful story to me, because when Vallejo gets to the point of maximum pain, when it's in bankruptcy and it has to halve the salaries of their firemen and cut the fire department by half, you would think that this would be an opportunity, occasion for despair. But if you go talk to the new Vallejo fire chief, who is a young, energetic man named Paige Meyer, you find a man who says, basically, this is a crisis, but it's an opportunity. I'm going to reinvent firefighting so we do it even better with half the resources. And he's energized by it. And this is what makes America, America. This sort of like, we hit bottom and we bounce. But I think that's where we're going. I think we're going to hit bottom.
Yeah. And could you give us just a couple words? I love the fact that you're a baseball guy. I haven't seen the movie yet because I'm watching baseball games here all the time. Would you want to make a comment about the Milwaukee Brewers, smallest market in the whole country? Look where we are.
Yeah, I love it when small teams win. But it's a the Moneyball story. I think the movie's great, by the way. I didn't have anything to do with it, but I think they did a great job with the book. I think that basically what's happened is that it's getting harder and harder and harder for a team that has fewer financial resources to find an edge. So it's really nice to see the teams in smaller markets have their day in the sun, because I think it's going to get harder and harder for them to get there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we invite you to come and watch the World Series with us, Michael.
Where are the seats?
I'll find some for you. Will you come? Yeah, we'll find some. I don't know if I give you mine or not, but maybe I would.
Well,
I don't know.
You
pledged.
Your pledge drive, people, and I'll give them the money.
All right. Thank you so much, Michael. Really, thank you. I love this guy's mind, and the book is just absolutely fascinating. We did have somebody write in and say, I always find myself talking about things I learned on WPR. My husband has started to listen to your shows now, too, and it definitely has improved our marriage. If we had only been broadcasting in Iceland, we could have averted the whole crisis, right? Oh, well, that was nice of Michael, and he's giving a pledge of $250, too. The book is Boomerang, Travels in the New Third World. It's hard to believe something so depressing can be so humorous, but he has that rare gift as a writer to give you a lot of solid information, and you meet some people and writes about them, and you say, I can't believe this. This is just outrageous. So we're asking you if you would like to pledge, and I hope you would, $150. That will be a premium for you, the book that you just heard him talk about, Michael Lewis, Boomerang, Travels in the New Third World. Thank you very much to Chrissy Pease, to Rhonda Fanning for putting together this fabulous program. He's only doing a handful of interviews, and this was one, and we thank him and them for it. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Hello, I'm Veronica Rickert with Rob Ferret. We are in our Half the Time Pledge Drive at Wisconsin Public Radio. You count on Wisconsin Public Radio for in-depth discussion of the issues, and we count on you to keep that discussion strong. That makes your financial contribution very important.
With your help, we'll reduce a 12-day pledge drive down to just 6 days. Every gift makes a difference right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We are looking for 51 pledges in the next 9 minutes. Thank you if you've already given, and I'll include Michael Lewis in that. Thank you for your pledge at the top of the hour. Sure do appreciate that. How about you? Help us stay on track. Help make our Half the Time pledge drive a success by making your contribution right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, you've been enjoying the conversation with Michael Lewis, the author of Boomerang, Travels in the New Third World. Well, now take a few minutes to make this hour and many hours to come possible. Put a value on the programs you enjoy every day, and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And as Kathleen just mentioned, this hour you can receive your copy of Boomerang when you make a contribution of $150. Your donation supports the programs you love, and you get this great thank you gift with your pledge of $150 or more. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And just like this hour with Michael Lewis, the Ideas Network connects you with the experts. How many times can you just pick up the phone and talk to the editor of a magazine, a politician, or the author of a book, like Boomerang? The Ideas Network brings these experts right to you. To help make it possible, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And becoming a sustaining member to WPR is truly the gift that keeps on giving. As a sustainer, your membership will never expire.
Your monthly deductions from your bank account, a donation on your credit card, will keep on going until you ask us to stop. Give a gift that keeps on giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, maybe you're thinking that your tax dollars to the federal government and the state already support WPR. Well, you're right. They do, and we thank you for that.
For you to get the quality and variety of the programs you're used to on WPR, we also need contributions from individual listeners. Listener support is actually the single biggest piece of our budget pie, meaning we really couldn't do this without you. Please make a personal contribution to pay for the radio programs you listen to on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert with Rob Ferret, and we're here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support is such a big part of why Kathleen Dunn is available to you right now. Make your donation in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You just heard that great discussion with Michael Lewis. Well, you can receive a copy of his book, Boomerang, Travels in the New Third World, with your pledge of $150 or more. That's your thank you gift. Your pledge supports the programs, and you get to enjoy the book, too. That's Boomerang. For your pledge of $150 or more, and your pledge of any amount, supports WPR programs at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, listening to Kathleen Dunn's program is like having a seat at some of the most fascinating conversations going on right now. I can't think of many things more important than trying to get a handle on what's going on economically in the world right now, mm-hmm. and to get a greater glimpse into what's happening, a deeper understanding, and the chance to talk to Michael Lewis alongside that. What is that worth to you, that deeper understanding? This is the time to stand up and show how you appreciate this program and appreciate spending time with Kathleen Dunn. Make your pledge. Show your support. Support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Looking for 47 more pledges in the next 5 minutes? Help us pay for the programs you depend on and help us raise those funds in just half the days of a normal fall drive. 6 instead of 12. Again, 46 now more pledges. Make yours at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You may not agree with all the opinions you hear from callers or newsmakers on WPR programs, but that's actually a good thing. It means that you're hearing multiple points of view and that you're fully engaged in the real discussion.
It means that you yourself are better informed about the issues because you've heard different perspectives. This is the kind of experience you can count on WPR for. We are listener-supported, and your gift right now keeps this diversity of opinions on the radio. Give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
When you became a regular listener to Wisconsin Public Radio, you took an important first step that began a wonderful journey.
Now take the next step and become a financial supporter. The step from listener to supporter is easy.
You decide how important WPR is to you. You decide how much you want to give, and then you make a pledge. Take that next step right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
43 more pledges now we need in the next 3 minutes. Think about why you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio and specifically to this program. Give yourself some time to think about it. And then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Because whatever your reason is for listening, that's also your reason for giving. You decide the reason, you decide your amount, and then you have one more choice. You either go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yep, you said it. You decide the amount of your pledge. Every pledge is appreciated, and every pledge helps pay for the programs you love on Wisconsin Public Radio. Consider asking for Boomerang Travels in the New Third World as your thank you gift when you decide to give $150 or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Just a couple minutes left during the Kathleen Dunn Show today. Your chance to get your copy of Michael Lewis's book with your pledge of $150 or more. Make your pledge now. This is the half the time pledge drive, usually 12 days in the fall. This is a big, important part of our budget. We're trying to schmoosh it down into just 6 days, and we can't do it without your help, without your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I think you're right, Rob. We are trying to smoosh it down, as you said. We've only got a little bit of time left to go. You've got to put the pedal to the metal and really step up to the plate, support the programming that you listen to, that you enjoy, and that you rely on. We are in the final minutes of this hour, the final stretch for Kathleen Dunn today with Michael Lewis. So do what Michael Lewis did. He set a great example. Make your pledge. Become a supporter and a member. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've just got a couple minutes left to talk. You can keep pledging into the news. I think we can hit this goal. 39 more to go. Hopefully lots of people are on the phone, online right now. Maybe you are. Maybe you're thinking about it. Please do it right now. 38 to go. Pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
888-202-2552, the number, and you can pledge online at WPR.org. Think about all the fantastic programs you've shared with Kathleen Dunn over the months and the years. She's been a constant companion, and she brings you the best sort of ideas, the ideas that you can really chew on that make a difference in your life. That's worth supporting, and you can do your part at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
38 more pledges now. Keep them coming in. You can make your contribution. You can help make this Half the Time pledge drive a success. Do you want fewer pledge days in a year? Here's your chance to show us that you want that with your pledge to make this Half the Time pledge drive a success. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Half the Time is pretty dramatic. You know, we could have shortened it by a couple days, but we really went for it. We decided to make it only 6 days. Normally it's 12, but for this to happen, for this to work, we need your support. We need you to step up at the moment when we are asking for your help, for your support, because you listen and because it's the right thing to do. At WPR.org or 888-202-2552 in the last minutes of this hour.
They keep coming in. Thank you for your pledge. Remember, if you pledge now, this is you've got just a few minutes left. Pledge now and get your copy of Michael Lewis's book, Boomerang, when you pledge $150 or more. $150 or more to get your copy of Boomerang. Pledge any amount, whatever feels right to you. Pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm going to say it again, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.